It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're in conversation with a beekeeper and apiarist in the St. Croix River Valley and her work to fight for pollinators every day through environmentally sustainable beekeeping practices and education. Christy Allen's bicycle-powered honey production and delivery enterprise, it grew out of the business she started in Minneapolis in 2010. Join in on helping pollinators thrive, questions about managing your hives, honey extraction, colony collapse disorder, beekeeping fundamentals, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Christy Allen is owner and founder of the Bee's Knees in Grantsburg, operating on her Trade River Ranch. She's also president of the Polk Burnett chapter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Christy, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, give us a read here. How is the bee population doing in western Wisconsin where you are?
That's a really good question. The bees that I manage seem to be doing pretty well. There's lots of honey to harvest at the moment, so that's kind of what I've been getting into.
How do native bees get along with commercial bees or managed beehives? How does that interaction work?
Yeah, it's a complicated story, but native bees, there is some competition out there at the moment. However, if we find a balance, taking care of our landscapes, providing enough flowers, and limiting our pesticide use, both species can thrive.
We've heard so much about colony collapse disorder in past years associated, as you mentioned, pesticide use, invasive pests, parasites, and then there's been the conversation around climate change and colony collapse. What are your observations about this phenomenon?
I really think it paints the picture of a lot of different things kind of coming down on us at the same time. Bees have, there's so many things to worry about. And as a beekeeper, you can only control what you can control as a manager of your hives. However, as people, we can, you know, have a very big impact on the other things that you mentioned, the way that we grow food and the way that we decide development and what we put in our lawns or don't have a lawn. These are all things that can really make a huge impact on our pollinators.
So at present, though, colony collapse disorder isn't a huge issue, or are you still seeing it?
So I have not seen it in my hives in a long time.
Okay.
A lot of the issues that were coming up when colony collapse was talked about, it was a symptom of other things going on. So bees get this varroa mite that spreads virus, and the more mites they have, the more virus, and the more outside impacts like pesticides, lack of food, habitat loss, the harder it is for them to fight off those viruses. So specifically to honeybees, colony collapse is something that beekeepers experience when there's so many pressures on the hive that the hive literally collapses and absconds or cannot continue on as a super organism. Native pollinators, on the other hand, are struggling. And honeybees did highlight that for us, but they have a much smaller colony. A lot of them, and specifically bumblebees, most of them are solitary bees. And the climate change, for example, large temperature swings can really impact a bee that has a small window of opportunity to get out and reproduce and forage in the springtime, as you can imagine.
Hmm. Talking about beekeeping with Christy Allen, she owns a beekeeping business in Wisconsin. Join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Christy, you've talked about how you really have to be present as a beekeeper, be focused, using all of your senses. Do you think, can bees learn to trust you?
You know, there was a paper that recently came out that really would suggest that. And I teach beekeeping classes to students, and a lot of my students will say, "Wow, they really know you." And I don't have personal conversations with the bees. I mean, sometimes I do, but they don't really talk back in my language. However, I think it's about your temperament. It's like how you approach a strange dog or any other animal. It's about your energy. And I would imagine that bees, because they function off of pheromones, they can smell you. I would imagine if you're scared or anxious or angry or stressed out, they can probably sense that in that regard. But again, this is all me just guessing. no expert on the a bee's sensing, you know, mm-hmm. if they know me or not or trust me. But I would say in that regard, sure.
let's walk in your footsteps for a moment. How many hives can one person manage, or how many do you manage, and what's a typical day in the life for you as a full-time beekeeper?
Yeah, so, you know, the beekeeping has a large range as far as size. The largest commercial beekeeper in the country is up to 40, 50,000 colonies.
Wow.
And that's a very different operation than mine. You know, that uses a lot of machinery, trucks, forklifts, and they will move their bees around. I am a non-migratory beekeeper, which means my bees stay put here in the frigid north. A typical day is driving within 60 miles of where the hives are at different farms or different urban sites in the metro area. And I check on them just to make sure that, you know, number one, that mite isn't out of control. And number two, that they look healthy and are making honey and reproducing. And a lot of the other time I'm planning. I also raise my own queens and sell bees as well. So preparing for that throughout the season.
There are, of course, the pests and the viruses you mentioned, diseases that hurt bee colonies, things that can happen in the hive that you go around checking. There are chemicals to keep those things in check. Should you get medication for bees? How do you grapple with that?
Yeah, so my philosophy on beekeeping, and when I say sustainable beekeeping, there's different things that I'm saying with that. Number one, I don't move my hives around, which can be stressful. I try to keep them, you know, where they're at. There's only certain circumstances that would force me to move them. But as far as treating for the varroa mite, I started out very much on the indoctrination of organic farming and not wanting to put anything into a colony. But what happens with varroa mite is the bees, it came from Asia and was brought over with bees to pollinate large scale almond production. And the bees that were here were not prepared to deal with the varroa mite. Over time, the honeybee has developed resistances and its own tools to fight it. But in the meantime, we've had to help, as managers of bees, we've had to help it get to a point where it can and develop its own defenses. And so I use organic acids, which are naturally found in honey. I use management techniques. I work with their biology to combat this mite, to keep it at lower levels, and breeding. So you can select for honeybee colonies that exhibit defenses against the mite. And so, you know, I'm pretty pleased with, it's taken several years, but I have very high survival rates. And a lot of it has to do with where I put my bees. I put them in places that I know there's a lot of forage, and I work with these small organic farmers, so I know that they're in a safe place from large-scale industrial pesticide use. And I only treat when necessary, and I don't use products that the mites can develop resistance to.
Okay. Western Wisconsin beekeeper Christy Allen with us. Got her start in the business of managing hives 13 years ago, sharing her passion for pollinators, the knowledge she's acquired to help hives thrive. Join in with your beekeeping questions, feeding new colonies, honey production, more. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The USDA's Strategic Pollinator Priorities Report published recently. It says honeybees and other key pollinators add tens of billions of dollars to the value of agricultural crops each year and provide the backbone to ensure that our diets are both diverse and plentiful with fruits, nuts, and vegetables. We have Christy Allen with us, beekeeper in Western Wisconsin, has made sustainable beekeeping practices her mission. Join in with your questions about healthy hives, encouraging these chief pollinators, overwintering hives, 800-642-1234. Christy is also president of the Polk Burnett chapter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union and stays with us. Christy, we heard from Jim in Cedarburg, sent us an email our way, and is asking, when would be the best time to apply a low-impact insecticide, Jim asks you.
If you monitor your mites, so there's a way that you can test for mites using powdered sugar, and you actually shake the mites off the bee. And there's plenty of videos online on how to do this. I recommend there's a threshold, and this comes from decades of research by lots of experts in the field, where this threshold, if you get 3 mites per 100 bees, and in order to get 100 bees, you actually you collect a sample, which is a half a cup of bees, and that equals 300 bees. And then whatever amount of mites you shake out, you divide that number by 3, and that gives you the percentage of mites in your colony. So recommended times to use, I only use, like I said, the organic acids. You can use other things that are organic, like there's a time-based treatment. And I would treat when the mites go beyond that threshold, unless they continue to keep the mite levels low. Hmm. So it becomes a real issue this time of year. You want to be really monitoring your mites August, September, before they make their winter bees, because the winter bees need to be the healthiest bees in the colony, because they live 6 months instead of 4 to 6 weeks.
Mm. What do you do with your hives over winter, and how do the bees do?
You know, if the bees are healthy before going into winter, they are incredible at thermoregulating their hive and can withstand temperatures. We're finding out more about insulating colonies, and I'm actually part of a SARE grant study this winter to test out some new materials that would help the bees maintain temperature in their colony using a certain combination of insulation. So R25 levels on the top and R7 on the side. And the idea is that they, you know, because bees form a cluster and they are able to maintain about 80 degrees in that cluster, but they only heat the cluster. Hmm. And we keep them in these pine boxes that are pretty soft, thin wood. And normally they'd live in a tree cavity that has insulation value of like R7. So we're trying to think more critically about the way that, not that we would keep warm in the winter, but that bees would keep warm in the winter. And it'll be, Stay in touch, because next spring I'll have some results on the way I used to winter bees and the way that I'm participating in the study this year. In the old method, we would wrap black tar paper around the colony to absorb the solar gain in the winter and then use some insulation on top. However, that solar gain, of course, goes away at night. Mm-hmm. And the bees really have to, they have to work hard to adjust to that temperature swing when it goes away. So we're always learning. And as beekeepers, it's always an adjustment.
Well, speaking of expending energy, can you share with us where the biking comes in here and how that materialized with the bees?
Absolutely. So it really was the kind of the tool of success for me as a business owner and a great marketing tool when I started out. So my aunt and uncle in 2010 asked if I would like to sell their honey as a way to get started in Minneapolis. And I was a year-round cyclist as a commuter. And I decided that on Halloween, as a marketing tool, I would dress up like a bee, paint my bike like one, and hand out honey samples. And I did that not intending to continue, but I really, really connected with people, with the community. It's a very bike-friendly place, and I started delivering honey year-round on bicycle. And then in 2013, was successful in getting a Kickstarter of $40,000 to build a pedal-powered honey house because I invented a pedal-powered honey extractor called the Bee's Knees Honey Cycle. And to this day, we extract all of our honey using the honey cycles and we rent them out. And I've sold several over the years. So that's where bicycles come into the game.
Oh, that is so fascinating. I mean, and so pedaling a bike for the honey helps to reduce the carbon footprint.
Yeah, that was, you know, being a value-driven company from very early on, I wanted to, whatever little impact that my business could have, I wanted to do. And actually, pedaling, there's three kinds of honey extractors. Well, now there's three. The hand crank is like a butter churner, right? You turn it with using your back and your arms. And as you know, your legs are much stronger than your back and your arms. So, it was a very simple transition from, well, not simple, but, I hooked up a bike to it. And, so the centrifuge, you know, you spin the honey around and then the force pulls it out of the comb. And mm-hmm. So on the bike, you sit there and you pedal and make the centrifuge go round. The other, you know, the next stage obviously is a motorized version of that you plug in. And so I went somewhere in the middle and people really, really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. It keeps me young and spry and kids come in and they eat a bunch of honey and they get all full of energy and love it. So it's a really great community building tool, but also a practical, functional tool for my business.
It's so interesting that you had to invent this. I mean, you had to, I would imagine there was some trial and error in trying to figure this out.
Absolutely. I was fortunate to be around some pretty incredibly smart minds that were in the bike community. And I worked with a man named Carl Storzinger and his father, who was a retired engineer from 3M. And I literally paid them in honey and beer and they helped me, engineer my idea into fruition. We had five generations and the fifth generation, you know, improving it every time. So yeah, I think we did a pretty good job and my next, you know, when things settle down a little bit after my big move, I intend to make a much larger one that can hold more frames.
Wow. Would you ever be willing or able to sell these, to mass produce these?
Yeah. So I started going down that road and quickly discovered, well, the timing was pretty bad. Geopolitically, there was a trade war with steel and this it's made out of steel. Mm-hmm. And so it started to make it pretty difficult. And I'm not a manufacturer. I'm I'm a beekeeper. and so I never did take it I sold like 10 of them, but in order to really make it affordable and worth it, you'd have to mass produce at least 50 to 100 at a time. Mm. So that requires a very large scale up of facility. It requires storage, safety. Having all the parts and everything invested in already. So someday, but wasn't in the cards at the time in 2017 to 2021. We've had some, you know, I'm sure getting materials and metal yes. and things like that have been difficult.
So. Yes, even hitting the bee community supply chain. We have apiarist Christy Allen. Her ranch in the St. Croix River Valley stays with us on helping to ensure the future of pollinators, the face of the challenges in the ecosystem. Join in 800-642-1234. News update is next on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We dig into the life of a beekeeper, learn how to help pollinators thrive, and grassroots efforts underway to help fight hunger in the St. Croix River Valley. Beekeeper Christy Allen is involved in all of these pursuits. Join in on the work of saving honeybees, native bees, bumblebees, what your community is doing to help pollinators and support the local food supply. 800-642-1234. Christy Allen owns The Bee's Knees, a bicycle-based beekeeping business in Grantsburg, and stays with us. Christy, we heard from Stephanie in Appleton, called in and couldn't stick around, but Stephanie is wanting you to, wants to ask you about, you know, being involved with native bees and native bee habitats. Stephanie says native bee populations often get overlooked in discussions about pollinators. And what would you say there?
Yeah, I don't disagree with Stephanie in that they really need to be just, the conversation needs to be more about native pollinators. Honeybees are managed. And like I said earlier in the program, they did really bring to our attention the struggles that all bees are facing. And I agree, we need to really be focusing on how do we keep the monarch safe? How do we keep all these different individual species of bees happy? And it's really about the imbalance going on with our ecosystem, and that we are losing plants due to development, due to industrial agriculture, and due to climate change. These are all things that we as human beings are a part of. And so I think that Stephanie has a really good point, and it's something as a beekeeper, I struggle with, because of course everybody loves the honeybee, but again, we need all bees to thrive.
What should I be planting in my yard to help bees thrive?
Yeah, so there's so many resources out there. The Xerces Society is a really good one, has regional guides, but anything in the mint family, sunflowers. You want to think about bees all year round. They need those flowers in the spring, summer, and fall to sustain them through their life cycle.
What about a water source? Because isn't that really important for regulating their hive temperature and for honey production?
Absolutely. Honeybees need access to water, and they need access to clean water within a quarter mile of their colony. So if you're in an area where there's a drought, it's a really good idea to put a bird bath out. The farmers I work with will sometimes put like a bucket with some water and a burlap sack. You want something that bees can land on to drink from, because otherwise they drown. So if you're going to do a bird bath, put some pebbles in it. If you're going to do, any body of water. And that's why you'll see them like drinking water from wetlands or little patches of mud by water, but not in the water.
There's a lot of beekeeping supplies and gear out there. What is essential and what isn't, and how do you decide?
There is a lot of stuff out there. This is, we we like to sell all sorts of gadgets. I mean, I made a petal powered honey extractor, so I shouldn't talk, but the most essential tool for me is a hive tool and a smoker. And of course, something to cover your face unless you really, really like pain. But, there are a lot of different things out there, the basics are the hive setup, the boxes you put them in, the frames, and then everything else is tools that can make your job more interesting or helpful, but the basics still work really well.
You know, how to start keeping bees, it can be a little bit confusing. And as we look at all the gear out there, that too is confusing. So what are some good questions to work through first? I mean, should you start with how many hives should I start with? Or why do I want to do this? Like, how do you approach this if you do want to get into beekeeping?
Kate, I think you nailed it on the head with why do I want to do this? So the reason that I started teaching classes 7 years ago was we saw a huge interest in honeybees. And because of Stephanie's question, and we need to take honeybee keeping seriously. And so if your intention, and I don't want to discourage anyone from keeping bees, but if you're a busy person and you don't have time to really learn and understand how to manage bees, then it's something you probably shouldn't do. And I would say half the people who take my classes, because it's a full season class, so it's 12 classes, which is about what you would, you know, put into your colonies visiting them, but there's a lot of prep beforehand. So if you want honey, that's a fine reason. But if you just want to keep bees because it's the hot new thing, I would think about it a little more critically in that. And so why you want to keep bees is great. If saving pollinators is the reason, I think it's better to plant flowers and create habitat for native nesting bees than it is to become a beekeeper. But beekeeping is really has changed my life and a lot of people who are really into bees. I know their lives, and it is a gateway into understanding our ecosystem, and bees rely on having good, clean forage. So it's, you know, it's complicated.
How has it changed your life? In what ways?
It's allowed someone like me to really find and be able to every day work my passion. I learned so much from them as an organism. They're an all-female run unit, and the queen is not in charge. So I get a lot of inspiration from them as a biological species that organizes themselves. So if you, there's different reasons to get into bees and there's different things that people like about them, but they are just an incredibly intelligent species. And I find a lot of really great things we can apply to our own lives.
Mm. Talking with beekeeper Christy Allen about this work, about farming, about food, the entire ecosystem, you can join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. I want to shift gears here to the St. Croix Food Alliance that you're working on and this initiative of the Food Alliance. Can you explain what you're doing here?
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple years ago, I became president of our local Wisconsin Farmers Union chapter, and it was in reaction to, well, I wanted to plug into the community, but I've been working with a lot of small farms since 2010 in this area. I was attracted to this area because of the diversity of farms that are frankly friendly to bees. I had several pesticide kills in Minnesota, that on farms that were really close to corn and soybean fields where the impact of pesticide use there took out several of my hives. Mm. And so I was looking for safe places for bees. But I moved to a property on the Trade River. And a couple years after I moved here, there was a proposal of a very large scale hog factory wanting to move in. And there, during the process of the community becoming aware and people resisting this idea, and this argument about who's a farmer, what is farming, and as a beekeeper, partnering with all these smaller farms that are members of what we're calling the St. Croix Valley Food Alliance, I got to see a level of farming that I really think is the answer to things like climate change, soil health, and safe places for our pollinators. And so I joined the Wisconsin Farmers Union because they were working on issues related to corporate control of agriculture, which is what this hog factory would represent. And I wanted to, you know, not only protect my little piece of heaven out here, but to work to protect the everything that goes along with that, that the clean water, clean air. And so I joined up with a group of farmers, and we wanted to show people that this area is incredibly special, and that the future of agriculture does not have to be large scale factory farms where animals are stuck inside. It can be these smaller scale farms that make up the fabric of Wisconsin's landscape and really do work with the ecosystem in a way that can protect pollinators and other creatures.
I wonder, with all of these small farmers banding together, has that made you feel like you have a bigger voice, a bigger stake when you're going up against large CAFOs?
That's a great question. I think that's one of our was one of the intentions in doing this, is that we planned some rallies and we ran into a lot of divisions and a lot of assumptions about who we are as people, and that happened on both sides. When agriculture is and farming is an incredibly hard thing, and smaller farms often don't have a voice because the government responds to big numbers and big data, and a lot of the subsidies go to larger farms. And so we really we want to have a voice, and we also want people to know that we can work together to really support these local farms. A lot of them, all of the farms that are part of the alliance, are direct to consumer sales. And so you have a relationship with the farm, and therefore you have some accountability. If you have a farm that it comes in and is operated from a company in Iowa, how good is the accountability going to be when something happens to your water table? It's going to be really hard to address that.
Or if the products that are made from that farm are shipped across the world and not used in the local community economy.
Absolutely. And that's why our mission is to strengthen and promote the local food economy, because a lot of our money just circulates here, and what you get from the farmer is fresh food, and what we get as farmers we get to live a good, healthy life and thrive economically. So it really is a win-win for the area.
Western Wisconsin beekeeper Christy Allen with us, local chapter president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Still time to talk about Habitat for Bees, making the local food economy more resilient, and the future of the small family farm. Join in 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with beekeeper Christy Allen of Grantsburg, who found her calling about a dozen years ago, her mission to revive the hive for healthy bees, protect the family farm, She teaches this three-month beekeeping boot camp on how to manage and overwinter hives with sustainable practices. And Christy stays with us on beekeeping and farming practices. Let's bring in Lori now in Shano. Lori, what is your question?
Well, probably about 5 years ago, I went to the Custer Energy Fair, and there was a guy there selling honey. And I asked him about the colony collapse disorder, if he was being affected by that. And he said that it didn't really affect him because he would kill his bees at the end of the summer. And that was, I just thought that was appalling. And I had a neighbor at the time who did beekeeping, and I told her about it. And she said that they, guys, old time guys used to do that when she got her hive, the guy that she bought it from, that he asked her if she wanted the poison that would go with it. And she said, no, she just didn't want to have anything to do with that. And she said that the reason they do that is because they want to take that extra honey. They don't, because the bees need some honey to make it through the winter. And they would take that that honey, and then they just kill their bees and not have to do it, deal with it and get new bees in the springtime. And that appalled me even further, that in the middle of colony collapse disorder, that there are still guys doing this.
And that practice was going on. Lori, thank you for bringing this up. Christy, what do you know here?
I mean, that's awful. and I know that that is a thing that, that goes on. And again, it's she brought up the reason that they're doing it is to make more money. And so I guess, you know, I don't know how you police that or what you could possibly do, but not all beekeepers do that. And I don't know any personally that do that. And I don't recommend it whatsoever.
Let's go to Mary now in Cushing. Mary, what is on your mind about the Food Alliance?
Oh, lots of things on my mind about the Food Alliance. I know, Christy, that some time ago I remember that there was an effort from local farmers to get some of the local food into the schools and also into the hospitals. And that seemed to be kind of going for a while, and then I think it sort of petered out. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be any more push to do some of that with the local food, to try to offer that seasonally, at least through some of our institutions in our area.
Mary, thank you. Christy?
Yeah, so the Food Alliance just got started, and we're all farmers, and so our capacity at the moment is not great, but we've applied for a grant with the USDA to hire a coordinator of the program to start to connect those dots. So it's definitely one of our goals, is to connect food more to the local institutions, especially schools. A lot of the farmers we work with have kids in the public schools, and so that seems like a natural fit. And we've been in initial conversations with some of the hospitals. It's just a matter of capacity at this point.
What would the grant allow you to do?
The grant would allow us to hire a full-time person to organize the farms and the local partners, and really invest all the organizing that goes into doing this work year-round. As you can imagine, farmers sort of disappear in the springtime and then resurface after recovering from the hard labor in the winter. And so there's a gap where we need to fill that gap, and we just need the resources to pay someone a good wage to do that work for us.
Okay, so we'll stay tuned there. Let's go to Joe now in Star Lake. Joe, what is on your mind?
Yes, you know, beekeeping is an ancient practice, and I'm fascinated by the folklore of certain things, and beekeeping would be one. You know, the customs, things that might not even make sense, but that beekeepers just do. Anything you could talk about, the folklore, customs, beliefs, rituals around beekeeping, I would find fascinating.
Thank you, Joe.
Wow, that's a tough question. There's a lot. there's a lot out there, but he's right that, you know, we have the longest relationship with bees than any other animal on the planet. And so humans do it. Honey was the first alcohol. Mead was used by the Norse people to encourage, you know, the honeymoon, to create the family. So it really does go back a pretty far way. And people's, depending on your culture, the relationship with honeybees is long, and a lot of people use honey as medicine and offerings, I'm sure, in religious ceremonies and things like that. So I wish I had a more specific answer
well, you,
on the fly.
you find the work meditative as well, and you have to be very present in the moment when you're with the bees. Is there any, you know, I hate to use the word ritualistic, but is there anything that you do kind of repeatedly before you approach a hive? Or is there any type of just thing that you do internally or otherwise when you're with the bees?
Yeah, I mean, I leave my phone in the truck. I think there are times where I just need to be calm. You know, I'll just sit in there and watch them come in and out of the hive and observe them. But spiritually speaking, I wish I had a better story for you. But that's my ritual is really lighting my smoker and just taking a deep breath and going to see what's going on with them.
Tim from Madison called, couldn't stay with us. In our last minute together, wants to know what might be the startup costs with raising bees. How much initial investment might you need?
Yeah. So, you know, in your first year, you're probably, it's recommended you keep more than one hive. So two hives at least. And when everything is said and done with bees, the suit and everything, it's about $1,200, $1,200 to $1,500 depending on what you get. But then, you know, after you have the equipment, that cost goes down as long as you can keep your bees alive. So, you know, first step, I would highly, highly recommend people take a class before they even buy anything, just to see everything that goes into it. So invest in the class before you invest in the equipment.
Yeah. So do the education piece first before you just go all out into the process of beekeeping. Oh, Christy, this has been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Kate. It's been a pleasure.
Christy Allen is owner and founder of the Bee's Knees in Grantsburg, operating on her Trade River Ranch, and she's also president of the Polk Burnett chapter of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.